This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream live, but you can get our app and put it on your phone. And, you know, you can decide when to listen. I just love this. I love the fact that Ground Zero on critical race theory and the liberal transgender activist movement, that the fight against it, Ground Zero, is Loudoun County Public Schools in Virginia. And I just love what's been coming out of it this week. I mean, it's been a good week. It's been a good week where people finally have said, okay, it's time to fight back when it enters our domain. No reference to Jeffrey Toobin here. The Seinfeld reference there. And thank you to a couple of people that recognized the Seinfeld reference when we talked about Jeffrey Toobin earlier. But this time, now, I wish there was audio for this or a video, and there isn't. I don't know whether because she's a minor or what. I don't know. But you and I searched
everywhere.
There's nothing, but there's basically a transcript of it and stories written on it. A 14-year-old Virginia girl is speaking out about what she says is a sexist move by the Loudoun County Public Schools to allow boys into girls' locker rooms. The policy followed a previous one that committed the county to providing an equitable, safe, and inclusive working environment regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, and other individual characteristics. The more recent proposed policy states in a draft that students should be allowed to use a facility that corresponds with their gender identity. At Tuesday school board meetings, Jolene Grover, 14 years old, who was wearing a shirt that read, "Women is female," argued, 2 years ago, I was told the policy was just an umbrella philosophy and you weren't going to allow boys into the girls' locker rooms, but here you are doing just that. Grover is an eighth grader whose mom pulled her out of the Loudoun County Public Schools last year after seeing various controversial policies emerging. She is currently homeschooled. Quote, "Everyone knows what a boy is, even you," she added, looking up at the board members. "Your proposed policies." Oh, this is the best. Let me enjoy this. I don't know why, but this Friday is a candy store. I'm sorry. And we've been just let free. "Everyone knows what a boy is, even you," she added, looking up at the school board members. "Your proposed policies are dangerous and rooted in sexism. When woke kids ask me if I was a lesbian or a trans boy, before I cut my hair short, it should tell you these modern identities are superficial." In an interview with Fox News on Thursday, Grover said she worried that the new rule would lead to girls being harassed and assaulted. During her speech, she claimed that her guidance counselor responded to her concerns about privacy and safety by noting that the bathroom has stalls. Fox News hadn't confirmed that, and the Loudoun County Public Schools declined to comment on Grover's speech. "Now boys are reading erotica in the classroom next to girls," she added during Tuesday's speech, "and you want to give them access to the girls' locker room, and you want to force girls to call those boys she? You do this in the name of being inclusive while ignoring that the girls are the ones who will pay the price. Your policies," ooh, and this hits home, "choose boys' wants over girls' needs. As we have stated, this whole thing of boys in the locker room, boys playing women's sports, is as misogynist as you can get. And even Gloria Steinem has submitted to the will of the misogynist man. What the misogynist man says goes, and the woman must obey. Without any questions, doesn't matter whether it defies science. What the man says goes because
the man says so.
And when the man says so, the woman must listen. That is progressivism in 2021.
I created a border crisis. I'll give it to the woman to clean up.
Well, so. I would just say to this young lady, I would just say, and to her parents, I'll just say this to her parents, that your daughter, let's quote the Charlotte Observer editorial board, your daughter needs to get used to male genitalia. That's the left. Your daughter needs to get used to it.
You know, they point out here that groups like the ACLU have defended the more inclusive policies in athletics and school policies. In 2016, the ACLU's James Isix penned a blog posted a post titled Anti-Trans Bathroom Bills Have Nothing to Do with Privacy and Everything to Do with Fear and Hatred. Quote, as a threshold matter, no one is proposing letting boys into girls' bathrooms. Preying on misinformation about transgender people and calling trans girls boys advocates for these harmful measures to cry the fictitious end of sex-segregated spaces altogether. Mm. No, they don't. We said this was going to happen, and we were right. We were right all along. Mr. Isix was wrong from the ACLU.
Yep.
He was completely wrong. We knew exactly what was going to happen. We called it a long time ago.
Yep.
It's as misogynist as you can get. The woman must submit to the will of the man. What the man says goes because
the man says so.
By the way, I do point to Eric every time we do that, just so you know. It's like.
And it's, as she points out here, it's basically the rule is, the play here is, the boy's wants over the woman's needs.
Yep.
But since men rule the world, right, liberals? They get to say so. Well, this has to be the rule.
To the man goes the spoils.
Yeah. Somebody make me a sandwich. I mean, this is the left today, and they're not even hiding it.
No, they're not.
They're proudly promoting it.
Yep.
Your daughter needs to get used to male genitalia. Get used to it.
A Charlotte Observer editorial from, I believe, 2016, 2017, yeah, whatever it was. But it could have been 2015. Forgot one. And they were promoting, and there wasn't a lot of pushback back then. All of a sudden, boom,
no.
What happens is it's starting to hit home. Before then, it was an abstract concept being proposed.
Well, you know, because it was the slippery slope, right? What happens if we get to the point of,
yep,
we're at that point, and now parents are looking at this going, whoa, no.
Well, you know, the ACLU was making the point back then, well, we're not saying that gender is sex. We're saying they're two different concepts, and anybody who doesn't promote that is promoting transphobia. Now, magically, gender has transformed into sex.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody seems to be upset about it on the left.
Right.
They were furious about it when that was being brought up. And conservatives were stating, well, excuse me, gender is sex. No, it isn't. Well, that's because you decided to change the definition of gender.
Yeah.
And so they did that. Now they've switched back and nobody seems to be upset about it.
Right.
That now gender is sex.
Right.
So why the change? Of course, they won't have that discussion. It's magically just became that way, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the liberal transgender activist movement in this country is as misogynist and anti-woman as you can get. And the liberals, the liberal feminist in this country, including Gloria Steinem in the last couple of months, have submitted and just waved the white flag of liberal feminism to the man who knows better than the woman. The man's opinion is correct, and the woman must submit because
the man says so.
Democratic policy making and the Democrat mindset in 2021.
It's at work all across the board, as was pointed out yesterday. Jeffrey Toobin gets to go back to work. If that were a female, would she get to go back to work?
Meghan McCain made that point.
Right.
And in a rare instance, we both agree wholeheartedly with Meghan McCain.
Certainly do. And forget about any advocates there at CNN for sexual misconduct, harassment, or any of that. All that's out the window. That's out the window.
Yep.
As of yesterday, that's over.
Well, look, if the Democratic Party and liberalism is going to endorse racism, they might as endorse misogyny. Right. If you're going to go, I mean, raise yeah, I mean, really right, think sure. about it. I mean, I'm not going to look at, and say one is a greater immorality than the other.
Mm-hmm.
They're both bad. But hey, if you're going to endorse one, why not endorse the other? Let's go
so.
For it.
Yeah.
Hey,
why not?
We're going to be racist. Does anybody really care if we're racist? Is it going to be noticed that we're misogynist, too? And we're anti-women?
Or do we care if it's noticed?
Yeah, we don't care.
They seem to be doubling down.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Every driver knows the cost of replacing tires is a major expense. What if you could save on tire costs without sacrificing performance or safety? Consider Retreads, a sustainable, cost-effective way to rack up your miles. You may already know that Retread tires offer a cost savings, but what else do you know about them? You may be surprised to learn that more than 80% of all aircraft tires in the U.S. today are Retreads. From fighter jets to school buses, Retreads move some of the most important cargo across many industries. They can also help you move your load, too. Before you make your next tire purchase, talk to a TA Truck Service tire expert about which Retreads may be right for your vehicle.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, you and I, as soon as we took the break there, got into a discussion and just talked about, as we were talking about in the last segment, just how insane the Democrats have become and just how, as conservative radio talk show hosts, we shake our heads at how quickly this happened, how quickly they embrace just racism and anti-female rights and opportunities, and they became misogynist, and we just shake our heads. But on critical race theory, I looked at you and said, it's really interesting because now the Democratic Party does not agree with arguably the greatest civil rights leader, as he's considered, in the history of the world. And I'm right. talking about Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
That was an argument to be made for it. I mean, that's not the purpose of it. So maybe I'll say modern day.
Yeah.
Consider right. the modern day, civil rights hero, biggest civil rights hero ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't agree with his philosophy.
Right.
The Democratic Party does not. the liberal black leadership in this country does not agree with Martin Luther King's philosophy. Now, you and I have stated this years ago. Whenever it was Martin Luther King Day, we said, it's interesting because, you and I have been on together for almost 16 years, what, next month?
Yeah,
16 years together right. Next month. And we said it from the very, very beginning. They don't believe in it.
Nope.
They come out and honor him. They pretend they believe in it. But now when it's brought up by conservatives, they don't even defend it anymore when they say, look, you don't believe in what Dr. Martin Luther King believed in. And there isn't really a response from the left because they know that they don't. They don't judge people by their character. They judge people by skin color.
Yep.
And that's become mainstream inside the Democratic Party. And you think about it, that's a hell of a jump. That's a hell of a jump from saying, oh, we come from the party of Martin Luther King. What we believe that he endorsed us, the liberal black leadership has put him up on a pedestal as their hero for years. And actually, if you delve into what his mindset was, judging people by their character and not the color of the skin, it's the complete opposite of what the Democratic Party has become. That's incredible when you sit back and think about it, that's the official position that they have taken today. It is really, it's quite mind-boggling.
Well, and they want to indoctrinate children. They're trying to send children home as bigots.
Yes.
And again, this goes back to the agenda crossing the line when parents get involved because of what's going on with their kids. Indoctrination isn't new. But something so blatantly wrong. You know, we can have the discussion about, and not that we were for it, it's all the indoctrination over the years that, we don't want to keep score. We'll give the kids a grade just for showing up and all this that, again, does not teach children to work, to make an effort toward those grades, to do more than just show up. You've really got to put the work in order to achieve those grades. Well, everything on indoctrination is blown out of the water by this massive move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a huge, huge, massive move that has parents saying, you're not going to teach my kid to be a bigot. You're not going to teach my kid to judge by skin color. Critical race theory is not something we welcome in our home. It is these aren't good values.
No, they're not.
They're just not.
And now it's finally hit home. And might I say it's starting to hit home in the suburbs. And people are saying no.
Right.
And I say that because I believe that in the cities, the intimidation wall is so great, the Democrats basically backed off. And now, now that it's come to the suburbs.
The ones who objected.
And I'm talking politics here, that the Democratic intimidation wall isn't as great as you move from the big urban areas and the big, huge far-left liberalism. And that intimidation wall, many Democrats felt that disagree with this, felt we can't fight this. We just can't fight this.
Right.
It just will be marginalized. We just can't do it. As they move to more Republican areas and more conservative areas, that's where the fight's going to start. And I think it's going to roll the other way. Because now you've got states coming out, and the states are superseding the cities, saying, nope, sorry, you can't even do it. You can't do this in your city.
Right.
I think Iowa just jumped on this, didn't they? The other day I saw the headline, Iowa. Yeah.
Right, yes.
Now, and each and every day you have more cities coming out and states coming out and saying, nope, not going to be taught in our state. We're not going to raise a generation of racists because the Democratic Party thinks that's the way to go.
Right.
And that's the way that the current president of the United States wishes to govern.
Yep.
We're not going to do that.
Wow.
It's not always pretty. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. This has really been cringeworthy week, isn't it, when you think about
it,
Eric?
Yeah, and it seems to be getting worse.
You and I probably would have thought after Vice President Harris and her performance this week that nothing could beat that for cringeworthiness, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's probably. That's
because it was so bad. It was
as
just really bad
as it gets, right. I thought.
Yeah, not as bad as it gets.
Apparently not.
Well, it's news, so we got to play it.
All right.
Because this is CNN. Jeffrey Toobin, who was used to work for The New Yorker for, 27 years, I think it was?
Mm-hmm.
After a Zoom call he thought had ended, he decided to masturbate in front of the computer and the camera.
Right.
And people from The New Yorker saw it. They weren't off. He was fired from The New Yorker. And CNN brought him back yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they had to get involved in the cringeworthy discussion of what he had done. And here it is.
Let's bring in CNN chief legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin to talk about this and more. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello, Allison.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, indeed.
I feel like we should address what's happened in the months since we've seen you, since some of our viewers may not know what has happened. So I guess I'll recap. I'll do the honors.
Help yourself.
Okay.
By the way, I'm cringing already. I don't want to go any further.
It's time to go to commercial.
Yes.
Somebody, please find some breaking news. Something.
Anything. Trump said something. Anything. Get us out of this if I'm the producer.
Go after Tucker Carlson. Do something else.
Please. Get me out of this. All right, here we go.
Oh, my gosh.
Continue here.
October. You were on a Zoom call with your colleagues from the New Yorker magazine. Everyone took a break for several minutes, during which time you were caught masturbating on camera. You were subsequently fired from that job after 27 years of working there. And you since then have been on leave from CNN. Do I have all that right?
You got it all right, sad to say.
Okay, so let's start there.
Okay.
To quote Jay Leno, what the hell were you thinking?
Well, obviously, I wasn't thinking very well or very much. And it was something that was inexplicable to me. I think one point, I wouldn't exactly say in my defense, because nothing is really in my defense. I didn't think I was on the call. I didn't think other people could see me.
You thought that you had turned off your camera?
Correct. I thought that I had turned off the Zoom call. Now,
you know, and let me just break here for another moment here. Because they, by saying he's their legal guy again, they've made it clear, you need to shut up.
Yeah.
In my defense, I'm like, shut up.
Well,
I'm not a lawyer, and I knew it. Shut up.
In my defense, it's like somebody charged with indecent exposure, and the judge says, how do you plead? Well, in my defense, I didn't think anyone was looking.
And we'll just see what else he has to say here quickly.
Now, that's not a defense. This was deeply moronic and indefensible, but, I mean, that is part of the story.
It's indefensible, but I'm going to keep trying to defend myself.
In my defense, but not in my defense, but not, because it can't be in my defense, but that part has to be known because it is part of my defense.
But I'm not a complete moron. I mean,
shut up!
Please! What did Tucker Carlson say last night? Go to something else.
Put Acosta on. Have Acosta lie. About what happened at Lafayette Square. Do something. Get this guy off.
Well, you know,
oh my God.
Any of them.
Oh,
I don't watch CNN, so I didn't see Don Lemon. Now, I'm not sure what's the show called now. It was Tonight with Don Lemon, and now it's Don Lemon
Tonight. Yes.
By the way, I thought that was a moronic move. Remember a few weeks ago when that was the moronic move?
Yeah.
Jeffrey Toobin, hold my beer. My gosh, this is, to finish the thought, I wonder what Don Lemon, if he were bringing Jeffrey Toobin on to explain the whole thing, what would that be like? Now, Cuomo.
I'm not going to say Cuomo would be.
Cuomo's not going to do the story.
Be celebrating it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good that you felt that you could express yourself like that in front of other people.
Right.
Are you going to run for president?
Right.
You know, a lot of people are asking that.
My gosh. Oh, okay. Okay. Here's the question. In this bizarro world that has become CNN, Chris Cuomo's show is never going to bring on Jeffrey Toobin to talk about Governor Cuomo's legal problems for a bunch of stupid reasons. And they all are owned by CNN. I mean, think about this. Think about all of the allegations against Governor Cuomo, right? The sexual harassment and possibly sexual assault. Again, these are allegations. Chris Cuomo's A, not going to talk about it. B, certainly not going to bring on a legal expert. And C, if he did, it wouldn't be Jeffrey Toobin, would it?
I go back to the things that you and I noticed and probably go back 6 or 7 years on this and the things that really, in a way, we just went, wow, that's really ridiculous. You know, they can't do anything worse than this. And no. They didn't. And we go back to, I think it was first Don Lemon, when he had the experts on it was Mary Schiavo, one of the leading experts, and plus a bunch of other National Transportation Safety Board people on after the Malaysia air crash, 370 air crash.
Mm-hmm.
Or the disappearance at that time. Yeah, the disappearance at that time, even though they have found some of the wreckage. But the disappearance at that time. And he brought up the fact of whether it possibly could be a black hole that did it. And you and I just went, wow, that's unbelievable. And the fact that Schiavo actually answered the question in a very nice way, well, you know, it really wouldn't happen because it would probably suck in the entire universe if there was a black hole or the entire solar system. So odds are there probably wasn't a black hole. But the fact that he asked such an ignorant question, sent us and said, what else, you know, could they match us or do anything else stupid? And then Jake Tapper comes along and he's in Missouri with the
in
Ferguson with the riots going on. And there's been riots for days. And he starts looking at the police there. He goes, look at these police. These police have riot gear on.
And they're armed.
And he was like disgusted with it. It's like, I don't know what day it was of the, they were there because of the riots.
Yeah. I mean, the riots have been going on at that point for days.
And we keep thinking it can't go further than this. Then all the Chris Cuomo stuff happens with his brother. And you think, wow, can they top that? And then this comes along. Now, understand, we're sitting here thinking they can't top this. I think they can.
Oh, I think they can.
In bizarreness, when I say top this, I'm not saying it's a good thing of what's going on at CNN. But is there any wonder that their ratings are crashing?
No. No, it's no wonder. It's just weird to watch,
and
honestly.
The only thing that you and I could come to a conclusion on, because their ratings are crashing, the only thing that would make you bring him back would be the thing that your ratings are crashing and you think that one of the reasons they're crashing is because Jeffrey Toobin isn't on anymore. So
yeah,
that's how desperate you are.
Right.
You got to bring him back because you're desperate. We somehow, hey, he really brought in some good ratings, so maybe he can continue doing that because none of it makes sense. I know people talk about redemption.
Right.
Well, you can be redeemed, but you can't be on my network anymore.
Right.
Sorry. You can't do. There are some things you can't do. And since the media is built on imagery, then again, maybe this shows it's not, the imagery doesn't matter on CNN. But all I know is most broadcast publications, and I think Meghan McCain said it the best, if a woman was caught masturbating and that happened to them, tell me that woman would be brought back onto a network.
Right.
And I can't see how that could happen.
It would not.
I don't see how that could happen. I didn't see how this could happen.
Well, after hashtag Me Too, how is it a good idea, generally speaking? So, someone says, well, it's been long enough. We can just bring him back. People will forgive.
Because Me Too only matters to them if it fits their political narrative of the bubble of today.
Right.
That's why.
Right, I guess.
Look, they dropped. Feminism got dropped.
Oh, yeah.
In a matter of a couple of years, they abandoned feminism completely for the misogyny of the liberal transgender activist movement in this country.
Right.
They just blew feminism out of the water.
Well, it went from hashtag Me Too to hashtag Nothing Happened.
Yeah. So, again, I do believe that when you're in the bubble of today, when you have no real core beliefs, when you're in the bubble of today and what your political narrative is of today, that's the only thing that matters. And everything else doesn't matter. I was surprised. I sat there and went, well, you're CNN. Your image is horrible anyway for integrity. Just don't bring it up. Just have him back one day. And if you want to have a statement at the beginning, Jeffrey Toobin is back. He's apologized and everything else for the incident that happened for the New Yorker, blah, 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 blah. And say, Jeffrey, it's glad to have you back. We played the statement. Anything you have to say? Nope. That's about it, except I'm sincerely sorry for it. And then you move on. What do you think's going on here? That's what you do. If I'm in charge, he's not coming back. But if my bosses told me he had to come back and I'm the executive producer of the show, that's how I do it. You don't mention and do what they did on the air.
Well, you know, outside of Chris Cuomo's show, you know that at some point, they're likely, at some point on CNN, on someone's show, to talk about the allegations against Governor Cuomo. Or any politician, even if they don't bring it up about Cuomo again. Any politician, because it happens pretty much every election cycle. There are one or two allegations on sexual harassment. And do you bring Toobin on to talk about
that? You can't. Well, yeah, you can.
I guess you can.
You can.
If you can bring him back, why not?
Yeah. You can't look at it from the standards of how we were run our media outlet. You have to look at the standards that they have, which, in fact, they don't have standards. The whole Andrew Cuomo, Chris Cuomo thing proved that.
Yep.
There are no standards.
Nope.
So, yeah, they can. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, some of the big economic news yesterday, even though the markets didn't seem to be bothered by it, was inflation.
Yeah,
going up 5% now over the past year.
It looks like the markets had already priced that in.
That's a great point.
And that probably happened a few weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago, when it was really clear that inflation was going to be hitting. And so now the question is, I guess, how bad, how much more could we see going forward?
Now, we weren't surprised by this because I think most... I think most conservatives or economists with any basic understanding of the fact that when you're coming out of a pandemic in which you close down a society, which supply chains were not ready to go,
right,
that the labor market intentionally suppressed by the extended unemployments, that demand is going to outdo production at that point, which just because of supply and demand will increase prices more than normal.
Yeah,
and that's exactly
right.
What happened.
Yeah.
And now it'd be interesting to see. Did that? He's out of the country. Was that asked yesterday? I didn't even check to see if Jen Psaki had an answer to that one. Does the president take any blame, or the Democrats take any blame for the fact that, again, not all inflation is due to it,
because right.
inflation happens no matter what, some degree, and probably would have happened even if the extended unemployments weren't there. But a great deal of it can be laid at the feet of the, not extended, the enhanced unemployment that has, obviously, with the news of what, over 9 million job openings
right now,
a record.
Right.
We know that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, it contributed to the inflation over the last couple of months.
Right. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around our entire planet. And maybe the signal reaches Mars. Who knows? Red Eye Radio, 866-90 Red Eye. He's Eric and I'm Gary. Eric Hurley, that is. Gary McNamara over here. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream our show live. Get our app, put it on your phone, and listen 24-7, 365 days of the year. All right, last hour of the week, so clear the desk.
Yeah.
All right. All the stories that some stories we got to earlier in the show, some we didn't get a chance to get to. We just mentioned this one, but this really, you and I talked about earlier about this story and also the deal that the two groups of senators made, five Democrat and five Republican, that has really no tax increases. There's an option for a tax increase. The Democrats aren't even looking at too well, which would be the option to tag the gas tax to inflation.
Right.
But the fact is, even Democrats see, I believe, a lot of Democrats see the problem of raising taxes after a pandemic has hit post-COVID.
Yeah.
Biden doesn't seem to see it, but I think Democrats do. The other thing is, nearly half of the Jewish Democratic lawmakers in the House signed a letter on Wednesday urging Representative Ilhan Omar to clarify a recent comment they said equated the U.S. and Israel to Hamas and the Taliban. We must have the same level of accountability and justice for all victims of crimes against humanity, Omar wrote in a tweet on Monday. We have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the U.S., Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban. The statement by the group of Jewish Democrats led by Representative Brad Schneider said that equating the United States and Israel to Hamas and the Taliban is as offensive as it is misguided. Ignoring the differences between democracies governed by the rule of law and contemptible organizations that engage in terrorism at best discredits one's intended argument and at the worst reflects deep-seated prejudice. It adds, the United States and Israel are imperfect and, like all democracies, at times deserving of critique, but false equivalencies give cover to terrorist groups. We urge Congresswoman Omar to clarify her words, placing the U.S. and Israel in the same category as Hamas and the Taliban, the lawmakers wrote. Well, she came out later on and backtracked at her comments, stating that's not what she meant. But even after she did that, the Democratic leadership, you have part of their statement.
Yeah, this is interesting because this is a joint statement by Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, Majority Whip James Clyburn, Assistant Speaker Catherine Clark, and Hakeem Jeffries. I mean, it's Pete Aguilar. It's the Democratic leadership. And this is what they wrote in their statement. Legitimate criticism of the policies of both the United States and Israel is protected by the values of free speech and democratic debate, and indeed such criticism is essential to the strength and health of our democracies. But drawing false equivalencies between democracies like the U.S. and Israel and groups that engage in terrorism like Hamas and the Taliban foments prejudice and undermines progress toward the future of peace and security for all. First of all, a couple of things there. Steny Hoyer, remember Steny Hoyer that it came out
was yes.
a couple of weeks, two, 3 weeks ago, talking about these are terrorists. This is an act of terror. And we thought, okay, wait a minute. Where's Nancy? Is she going to come down on Steny Hoyer for doing this? Well, no. Apparently, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what kind of internals they're seeing there, the Democratic leadership on this entire situation with between Israel and Hamas. But it is clear that that politically, at least, they must come out and condemn Hamas, that they must come out and condemn Omar for statements. They had to do this, and it happened fairly quickly. I mean, it wasn't as a matter of, you know, the media just sitting there and asking a bunch of questions over and over again. And in the past, that would be basically the right media. It would be Fox News asking questions. Well, what are you going to do about her statement? What are you going to do about this? What do you think about Israel and Hamas? And no, this is the leadership, Democratic leadership, coming out, officially labeling Hamas as terrorists, which they are, and the Taliban as well in that statement. They included the Taliban in that statement. And it's not just one. It's not just Steny Hoyer. It's the entire leadership.
Yep. And then you have, like I said, the Jewish Democratic lawmakers come out also and criticize her. It's important to understand, though, that this was after she backtracked and said, well, that's not what I meant.
Right.
I didn't mean to have a moral equivalency, and the leadership still took off at her. Well, you have to understand that nothing happens in a bubble, because Rashid Tlaib told her Twitter followers, freedom of speech doesn't exist for Muslim women in Congress. That was the whole point, because the squad attacking back. Here's an article headline: squad comes to Ilhan Omar's defense, enough with the anti-blackness and Islamophobia. Well, it's interesting because, the party that we have talked about practices identity politics. Don't be surprised when it's thrown back right at you and you that have been viewed as the leaders of the oppressed actually become the oppressors, because there it is. Members of the far left squad defended Ilhan Omar on Thursday after dozens of Democratic colleagues condemned her for comparing the U.S. and Israel to Hamas and the terrorist organization. AOC, Representative Bush, Presley, Tlaib demanded a halt to criticisms against Omar. They said it's Islamophobia, anti-black, you know, all the usual stuff that you would expect to hear from them. And they wrote, stop the bad faith attempts to take Ilhan Omar's words out of context. Well, they didn't.
Well, here's my
They didn't take it out of yeah. context.
Here's my question. Why did Omar feel like she had to backtrack and clarify?
Yes.
Why that? I don't see it, because I don't know that came from leadership necessarily. Did it come from people in her district?
Don't know.
Because, you know, she used the same words. I was in no way equating terrorist organizations with democratic countries with well-established judicial systems. And it was not a moral comparison between Hamas and the Taliban and the U.S. and Israel.
But then she wrote, the Islamophobic tropes in this statement are offensive. The constant harassment and silencing from the signers of this letter is unbearable, adding that citing an open case against Israel, U.S., Hamas, and Taliban in the international in the international community is in comparison or a deeply seated prejudice. You might try to undermine these investigations or deny justice to their victims, but history has taught us that truth can't be hidden or silenced forever. So to me, it seemed like she wanted it both ways.
Well,
she would say, you're taking me out of context, and now I am the victim being oppressed by you.
Sure, and that's expected. But why did she feel it necessary to use the language that others are using in terms of, you know, Hamas is or a terrorist organization, essentially? I wouldn't expect there had to have been
she didn't
pressure.
Say that.
Well, she was talking about, I was in no way equating terrorist organizations with democratic countries and with well-established judicial systems. So why did
you
she
said
feel-
compare? Oh, I thought you said why that she was backing off. That Hamas was a terrorist organization. That's what I thought you were saying. Okay. All right.
Now I understand.
Now I understand.
She was saying
the comparison.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Why did she feel it necessary? I mean, the pressure had to come from somewhere.
Right.
Either her constituents or House leadership.
But,
or both.
But that's weird because she's comparing them as equal, but she really doesn't believe, I don't think, that Hamas is a terrorist organization.
That's my point.
Right. She's trying to equate the two.
Why in the clarification or backtracking did she feel she had to use that language? It could be that it was House leadership, but I don't see that being enough for Omar to go that far in her language.
You know, we said this. We called them the terrorist squad a couple of weeks ago because and that's in essence what the Democratic leadership said.
Right,
so when we said it,
we
weren't being just, you know, you guys are just being partisan as heck. No, that's how it's coming across.
Right.
And what the rebuke by the Jewish lawmakers and the leadership came specifically from her statement that actually was making that comparison.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, so the rest of the squad is coming out in her defense, so there was clearly no pressure from the top for them. Why her?
Yeah. Well, they're accused.
I'm just curious.
Well, they're in a way stating, without getting specifics,
yeah, right.
You misquoted her,
right.
and you're doing it because this is Islamophobia
yes.
and anti-black. So they're including the leadership and the Jewish members of the House of being Islamophobes and anti-black.
Yeah, they're acting as expected.
Yes, exactly.
Why isn't she? In that clarification,
she called them Islamophobic.
Mm-hmm.
Omar did.
Yeah, I know that statement, so. That part is expected.
Right. So I mean, that's the whole thing. I'm saying she's not saying she's simply saying I didn't say what I said.
Mm-hmm.
And you're Islamophobes, and she's angry. So her backtracking was saying, that's not what I said. Well, what specifically did you say? She's saying, well, some international court, whatever it is, the international court is stating that these are war crimes by Israel, and I'm using that comparison. So she's using that as a defense for her over-the-top rhetoric, in essence, comparing the United States and Israel to terrorist organizations, which, of course, they're not.
Right.
By the way, their argument is exactly the argument that we gave a couple of weeks ago to call this squad the terrorist squad, is that you cannot compare a terrorist organization, even if there are policies in war you may disagree with a republic. You can't do that. It's impossible. They're not the same thing, and we said that's the flaw. Well, it seems like the Democratic leadership and the Jewish, a significant portion of the Jewish contingent in the Democratic Party thinks the same way.
Yeah, right.
By the way, this is an exercise in futility, us trying to figure out what's in Omar's head.
Well, it's actually not. I really don't care what's in her head. I pretty much know. But I'm interested in what's going on with the party.
Right.
Further separation between party leadership and the squad and the radicals. Not that I expect it to be complete separation.
Remember, the squad also said, because this goes beyond just the statement yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they also called Israel an apartheid state.
Mm-hmm.
And we had stated they're not an apartheid state because to be an apartheid state, what they were talking about, because we even had a couple of callers that, again, were against our point of view, mm-hmm. that didn't even understand what an apartheid state was, mm-hmm. that's in reference to South Africa.
Right.
And the apartheid state was not how Israel treats the Palestinians, but how they treat Arab citizens of Israel is why they were called an apartheid state.
Right. Right.
Well, you can't make that case because they are a democratic republic. And when you go through in the parliamentary system, but when you go through it all and look at it, you sit there and go, well, it's impossible. They don't match what was going on in South Africa. It's right. not the same thing.
Right.
It's like Biden saying the Georgia election law is like Jim Crow on steroids. Well, mm-hmm. if you know what Jim Crow laws are, you know what steroids are, and you know what the election law is in Georgia, they don't even match up.
Right.
That doesn't even match. So you're taking this over-the-top rhetoric that they've constantly thrown at the United States and Israel that are absolute lies. I think this is a thing that set them over the top, but they're also looking at the totality of what Omar has said over a period of time, mm-hmm. too.
Well, clearly they see the damage. I mean, there's
yes.
damage coming and pressure coming from somewhere, and it's significant.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Some upcoming USDA reports should complement information released from the June meat production, export, and price forecast. That according to Chief Economist Seth Meyer.
On the pork side, some big $3 a hundredweight increase for 2021, and that just reflects what we've observed about really great domestic demand and really great export demand.
Which leads to anticipation about the June quarterly hogs and pigs report.
So we have quite elevated price expectations for 2021. We're about halfway through now, moderating prices into 2022. I think this next hog and pig report will give us a good basis for thinking about what production looks like into 2022.
More modest production and price changes were reported for beef, although export demand continues to be strong.
Cattle on feed report will kind of give us a picture of where we're at. And when we think a little bit longer term, we also have the cattle report that gives us a more of a production-based look.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Here's just a thought about the squad. I just say it's not a comment, it's a thought. Well, if it's a thought and I make it on the air, it is a comment. I forgot I was on the air.
But only if you say it.
But it was, no, but it was just a thought. Remember that AOC and the squad felt like backing Biden, that they were conceding as far as they possibly could go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they were really compromising.
Yeah.
That they really didn't want to do it, but they knew, okay, we're still all pretty new to Congress.
Right.
We've got to pay our dues, which means we have to give homage to the president and the leadership that we actually don't agree with in the hopes that we can move our agenda forward. Well, how long does their patience last? If, for example, Biden agrees to a deal, And we'll go over it here in just a couple of minutes, but the Senate deal, the Senate working group deal, it's actually not a Senate deal.
Right.
A Senate bipartisan working group deal. It's just 10 senators who came to a infrastructure plan that would actually only increase new spending by $579 billion when they were talking about $4 trillion a little while ago. And they wanted new spending on this.
Right, right.
Not to work the baseline in to make it up to 100, you know, by 1.2 trillion. Clearly, they're not getting what they want. AOC won't get what she wants for the Green New Deal and everything else because that was their plan. They can't convince. They are being admonished. They're being taken to the woodshed by the Democratic leadership on Israel. And you and I said, if you looked at the polls, the Democrats weren't winning a lot of the things that were being said by the squad, which was, you know, Israel's an apartheid state and all that. People looked at Israel and the United States and said, no, we think they're a very important ally. We give credit. I give credit. You give credit to Trump
for being part of the Abraham Accords and putting Israel within that.
Right.
But when do they finally say we've had enough? Is this the beginning? Is their response part of the frustration that we gave and gave and our party still doesn't recognize our radicalism?
Here's your forecast.
More wet weather is in store for the East Coast and Mid-Atlantic today, as well as from central North Carolina into the Tidewater and Piedmont area of Virginia into Maryland. We'll see the heaviest amounts of rain today, but that'll spread later this afternoon into the Deep South, eastern Kentucky and Tennessee, Alabama and northern Georgia, all set to receive a good amount of rain and potential thunderstorms. North of New York City, things are relatively dry today with spotty showers in the northeast. For North and South Dakota into northern Nebraska, there are heavy showers this morning, thunderstorms producing hail, lightning, and damaging winds. Finally, a break in showers for Texas, Louisiana, the Four Corners region, and California all dry today. The issue now for the Southern Plains is high heat. We'll see near 100 for Dallas-Fort Worth today, 104 in Phoenix. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
The Bonus Show.
And he's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Decide to have a quote of the week, not an audio cut of the week, but a quote of the week coming up, because it's not an audio form, but having a couple
Is
of minutes
here. Is it from Jeffrey Toobin?
No.
Good.
No, we're not doing it on
Thank
Zoom.
Thank goodness.
No. A couple of other stories we want to make sure that we get in, because we had talked about this yesterday. If you listen to yesterday's show, we talked about Biden, who was talking to U.S. soldiers over in Europe and told them that when during the Obama administration, he went to the Pentagon, and the Pentagon told him that the number one threat to the United States was climate change.
Right.
And when we heard that yesterday, we said either he's lying and they never said it, or they said it to him, but they were lying. But one way or another, they were lying.
Yeah,
the number one threat is not.
Right.
However you look at it, it was a lie that was being said.
Right.
And we had asked, we said, well, the Joint Chiefs of Staff should comment on this. Well, he must have heard that we said it, and so he decided to go before Congress. All right, maybe I'm making some of this up.
We did say that he should make a statement.
And he did before a congressional hearing yesterday. America's top military officer said Thursday that China and Russia remain the greatest military threats to America after President Biden said that the Joint Chiefs of Staff told him that the greatest physical threat facing America was global warming. Climate change does impact, but the president is looking at it at a much broader angle than I am. I'm looking at it from strictly a military standpoint. And from a strictly military standpoint, I'm putting China, Russia up there. Army General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told a congressional panel on Thursday morning in response to what the president had said. Well, I like when he says, from a strictly military standpoint. What other standpoint am I supposed to hear from the Pentagon?
I don't know.
Strictly military, I would guess. I mean, they are the Pentagon.
Maybe musical. I mean, it's the Biden administration.
Musical. That caught me off guard.
Do we have a music czar?
and so I still believe Biden was lying. He made it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
They did not. It was never, I don't believe it was ever said to Biden that by a person. And if the person military did say that, as we said yesterday, they ought to be fired. But I don't believe they said it. I believe Biden lied about that.
Yes.
Because clearly that's not the number one challenge that we have or threat that we have to the United States. And it's reprehensible that he would do that, because why? Other countries are listening to the president say that. China and Russia are listening to this idiot say those things.
And remember, he's being serious.
Yes, exactly. I'm not joking. Remember that.
Right, this is
I'm not joking. By the way, I say idiot, and we use that term quite frequently, even in a self-deprecating manner to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no disrespect there. It's that it's an idiotic statement to say.
Yeah.
And it's harmful rhetoric to the United States to the point that the next day the Joint Chiefs of Staff has to come out and say, well, no, that's not true. But from a strictly military point, Biden's point is broader. It's not what he said. Biden didn't say that. Don't make excuses for him. Biden said the Pentagon told him the chief threat to the United States is global, is climate change, global warming, whatever the hell it is now.
Mm-hmm.
He said it. And when he says the Pentagon, we don't think, oh, when Biden said that the Pentagon said it, well, the Pentagon must have been talking in not military terms, but they must have been talking about it in baseball terms.
Musical terms.
Musical terms. Thank you. Just unbelievable. Just shake your head at that one. So that was clarified yesterday. It'll be interesting to see if that question is asked or was asked yesterday. I'll have to go back and see if that question was asked of Jen Psaki. By the way, the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that isn't our number one problem. Yes, but the president was talking in a more broad sense. Yes, but he was talking specifically about the Pentagon, so he wasn't talking about it. He did not phrase it that way. Did the president phrase it wrong? I would drive these people nuts.
When he's saying that top military brass at the Pentagon are saying this, then yeah. We ask the question, who? And it's not true. He lied about that.
Meanwhile, Governor Abbott in Texas announced plans to build a wall on the southern border while at a summit to discuss border security in Del Rio. I will announce next week the plan for the state of Texas to begin building a border wall.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Abbott announced other border security measures, including the creation of the governor's task force on border and homeland security and $1 billion allocated towards border security. During the summit, Abbott blamed the Biden administration for the influx of migrants traveling into Texas. While securing the border is the federal government's responsibility, Texas will not sit idly by as the crisis grows. The state is working with communities impacted by the crisis to arrest and detain individuals coming into Texas illegally, Abbott said, according to KTVT. Our efforts will be only effective if we work together to secure the border, make criminal arrests, protect landowners, and rid our communities of dangerous drugs and provide Texans with the support they need and deserve. It'll be interesting to see what the plan is. It's tough to comment on it, except the fact that I would expect a lawsuit to come down from the federal government. How does the state build a border wall on private property where they get their permission, I would assume, and on any state property? They can't build it on federal property without permission. So how will they do it? This will really be interesting to see. Now, I believe Democrats will come out and say, he's just playing politics. Fine with me. If he gets nowhere with it and it ups the debate, ups the ante in the debate on this issue, I'm fine with that too.
This is, I think, again, keeping the conversation going, but since Governor Abbott has a high profile, you really keep it, you're sending the ball back into the Biden administration's court, right? So if they do file suit, that's going to take a while. That's going to keep it in the news. But also it positions Biden in a very interesting place because people blame him for the border crisis right now. That wasn't the case in Arizona. It was a totally different situation when the Obama administration went after Arizona when Jan Brewer was governor. It was a totally different situation. And now you have politically a very different environment. And I think the American people are looking at this going, you know, this is Biden's mess. Don't know how you clean it up, and you can't have this going on at the border. And I think Abbott is the perfect governor to make this happen.
You know, this is interesting because you think about how the media is covering this, and the mainstream media can't even ignore what's going on at the border
mm-hmm.
or what the vice president has done. This is actually the text from CNN the other day. All right, here we go. The vice president has never been particularly adept when confronted with questions that she doesn't like or doesn't want to answer, as she demonstrated during the 2020 primaries when she repeatedly dodged and fumbled questions about her health care plan. In this case, she deflected a straightforward question from NBC's Lester Holt about why she hasn't visited the border by laughing it off and stating that she also hasn't been to Europe, adding that she didn't understand the point that Holt was making, even though everyone else did. This is from CNN. It was a clumsy answer that came off as tone deaf, given that the situation at the U.S.-Mexico border is one of the most troubling issues facing the administration. Finding a solution for stemming migration from Central America that is a problem that has eluded multiple administrations for decades, but even some White House officials who want her to succeed in this difficult endeavor were perplexed. And again, we believe that's a lie. We believe that was a planted story to CNN in order to start to distance themselves in some way. I don't think they know how,
mm-hmm.
From her reactions. She didn't do herself any good yesterday either with some of her responses that we played earlier on the show, which just keeps digging the hole bigger. But it shows that they have to cover what's going on at the border. And so if Governor Abbott does make this a big to-do, this is something that the mainstream media will not ignore.
Right.
And they're going to cover. And so, where do you go? You know, where do you go on this?
Well, there was some attention given to even Democratic lawmakers in Texas who were not happy with what's going on at the border. And, of course, mayors of towns like Del Rio and others. But Abbott has a much higher profile. It turns it into a legal battle of a different sort because of the inevitable lawsuit coming from the federal government. You know, the Biden administration has to take action on this. That's not going to fare well for the Biden administration politically.
Our quote of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Not even audio cut. Quote of the week coming up next. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The fuel and exhaust systems inside diesel engines work closely together. As a result, fuel and exhaust-related issues can be some of the most difficult to diagnose. A symptom in one system can often arise from a problem in the other. Here is a common fuel and exhaust issue that might not be what it first appears. You're dealing with regions. Regeneration, a normal self-cleaning process inside your engine, is a prime illustration of how fuel and exhaust systems work together. Typically unnoticeable, regions occur inside a component called the diesel particulate filter, or DPF, a part of the exhaust system designed to control emission levels. If the fuel doesn't burn completely, the additional soot puts extra strain on the DPF, sometimes to the extent that it can't keep itself clean enough to operate. When this happens, the equipment can't be used while it completes an aggressive and time-consuming reboot. To help equipment owners have less downtime, Cenex Premium Diesel is enhanced with Cetane Improver that provides a more complete burn, generating cleaner exhaust for a longer-lasting DPF.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Just the quote of the week, and the reason I just happened to see this a couple of hours ago, and I hadn't read it on the air yet, and I just saw it and I went, wow, this is really good, especially in a week where we finally see, the uprising of people against critical race theory in this country,
mm-hmm.
and regular people standing up and saying, I'm not going to raise my kids to be a racist. They're right. Not going to be bigots.
Right.
Democrats are not going to teach my kids to be a racist, which is what critical race theory is. Charles Cook in National Review was writing a conversation on race, but a little different from what this context is. But this was part of it that I said, wow, just a couple of paragraphs, a couple of sentences. And I went, this is really great stuff. And he talks about that the guest to Yale University who said she fantasizes about shooting white people dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, no, I was doing that to start a conversation. And he writes, goes, we're now living in a country in which an invited guest of Yale University can say aloud that she fantasizes about shooting white people dead to do the world a blanking favor and expect that her words will be explained away as a caring attempt to start a conversation.
Yeah.
While a black Supreme Court justice who believes that racial discrimination is a legal problem in all circumstances can expect to be maligned as an Uncle Tom or even as a white supremacist. We are now living in a country whose academic and media establishments have become increasingly deranged by a fringe theory, critical race theory, with elementary premises that do not differ greatly from those once offered by Alexander Stevens, by the way, who was vice president of the Confederacy, who believed that the natural state for blacks was slavery. While those who champion genuine equality and freedom of expression are labeled casually as fascists. We are now living in a country in which corporations are happy to spend millions of dollars inviting peddling frauds to tell bewildered employees that they are secret segregationists, while strongly backing legal initiatives that would literally reimpose government discrimination on the basis of race. It's Calvin Ball all the way down. Calvin Ball, by the way, the game invented by Calvin and Hobbes, which there are no rules, and they create new rules as they go along.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. It really hits where we are, not where we are as a country, where the left and the Democratic Party are.
Yeah.
That's where they are right now.
Well, we've talked about it and joked about it on the whole Calvin Ball thing. That from our perspective, it's like, okay, we don't write the rules and we don't have the rule book. And we commented that the rule book changes on a daily basis. And it's Calvin Ball. I never even put the two together.
I know, neither did I.
It is.
When he put that in, I went, Calvin Ball. Oh, yes. That's right. There are no rules and we create the rules as we go along.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.